CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Wall Street Journal reporting about American shipyards and the demands for the Navy's protection of the sea lanes of North America, of its own people, in a conflict zone that moves from the East Asia, the South China Sea, to the Indian Ocean, to the Gulf, to the Red Sea, to the Mediterranean, into the Atlantic. I welcome Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy retired aviator, now at the Sagamore Institute, writing about the need the Navy has for shipyards. And the Wall Street Journal has a piece in these last hours that restates in the journal's fashion the demand and the need. This sentence: America's shipyards are struggling to keep up with peacetime demand. Submarines are bogged down by maintenance delays and new ones are behind schedule. The Navy's expecting two new Virginia-class submarines a year, but is receiving the boats at the rate of 1.4. There isn't enough trained labor. Dry docks are in short supply, and in case of some critical components, only a handful of vendors are still standing. Jerry, a very good evening to you. Wall Street Journal takes up the charge that you and your colleague Jim Talent published at the National Review Online at the beginning of the year. It is heartening to see that the journal has recognized the problem as you do. I just read the sentence to make certain they had the same numbers you do. There's not enough shipyard, there are not enough workers, and the question now is Congress able to respond to this need? Good evening to you, Jerry.
Good evening, John. And it is good to actually see that the broader media, the broader social dialogue is now picking up this issue after so many of us have been somewhat trying to raise the alarm over the last 20 years. It's good to see the broader media picking up. We're starting to see notice in everything from the Wall Street Journal to The Economist to The Washington Post have all begun to remark upon this. So we do know that it's there. The problem is that the solutions are neither easy nor quick. And so being able to get the Congress, as you just asked the question, you know, is Congress ready? If the Congress is ready tomorrow and begins to, say, double the Navy ship construction number, you won't see the effect of that for several years to come, because it takes time to be able to re-expand an industrial base that was forced into compression and consolidation over the last 30 years. So we really need a focused industrial policy to bring back the shipbuilding and ship repair industrial base.
The challenge is China. I believe, Jerry, you told me when we last spoke of these matters that China has one shipyard that is the equivalent of all the shipyards the U.S. has. Do I remember that correctly?
That is correct. The Jingnan shipyard, which is highlighted in the Wall Street Journal's recent story that's just come out, the Jingnan shipyard has more ship producing capacity than all of the American shipyards combined. And when you consider, although that is China's largest shipyard, you consider that they have 19 yards. Their shipbuilding capacity simply, overawes us here in the United States. We are dwarves in comparison to what it is that they can bring, which has an implication for us in a wartime scenario where even if we were knocking Chinese ships out, let's say that we went to a hot war over Taiwan, the fact is they can produce new ships much more quickly than we can, and they can produce new ships rather than trying to repair ships that have been damaged. It is a hot assembly line there.
I want to address an issue that came up recently. I want to make certain I understand it. I would say that Chinese manufacturing has uncertain quality. That's what I would say about the manufacturing I see. Is that true for their ships as well? Is there talk about them cutting corners, putting sawdust where there should be metal, anything like that? Because we had that random report about the rocket forces being undetermined.
Yeah. So, yes, the Chinese industrial base has a reputation for not being as reliable or that its products being as good as ours are. The United States Navy has evolved over the last 70 years to be not only the most advanced in terms of technology in the world, but also the safest to operate, which is why the incidents in 2017 were so shocking, where we had collisions at sea and some groundings that resulted in the loss of American sailors' lives. That's simply not the way that we've operated. In many ways, the impulse of Hyman Rickover, the father of the nuclear Navy, and the standards that he brought to bear in the construction of first our nuclear powered submarines and our nuclear powered surface craft, this sort of refashioned the mentality of American ship design and shipbuilding. We now design all of our ships to an extremely high survivability standard, wherein a ship is expected to be able to take a shot, be hit by an opposing missile or perhaps even a torpedo, and if not keep fighting, at least be able to safely make it back to an American shipyard where it can be repaired, thus saving American lives. There is no one that ascribes that level of design to Chinese ships. Many of their ships have a reputation of sort of use and throw away type of approach to things, which is why China is able to produce so many. They are producing their Navy ships, their surface combatants, in the same shipyards where they're building container ships and cruise liners and gas carriers, petroleum ships. They're designing them all to essentially to a commercial standard. We in the United States Navy have a military standard that is higher than what we do on commercial standards, and all of our ships have to meet that.
I want to know where this begins, Jerry. And the question always is it that peace dividend of the 1990s, or was this in place during the Reagan years, the cutback? Or was it a product of the Navy not being emphasized, other services, the rocket forces, the Air Force? Where did it begin to think that we could get by with a Navy without adequate shipyards?
Well, John, there's been on two occasions in the post-World War II era where a decision was made that we essentially sort of coast, that we had enough ships and that we could ride the battle force numbers down as the ships were decommissioned. The first time was actually right after the end of the Korean War. We had over 1,200 ships in the American Navy at that point in time, and the decision was that we would go ahead and take many of those ships and we would modernize them, give them new combat systems, improve their radars and their missiles and guns, but we wouldn't build a lot more. Then so we arrived into the Reagan administration some years later, two decades later, where the Navy had dipped from that 1,200 ships down to around 520 ships as Ronald Reagan came in. We went through a massive buildup and also a massive modernization, integrating some of the most advanced sensor and missile systems in the world then with the new Aegis Mark 7 combat system. So we completely revamped and remodernized. But then even as Reagan was still in office, we began to cut back on our military investment. The Soviet Union was soon no more. And throughout the 1990s, we lived on the peace dividends as well as the base realignment and closure commissions, where we cut back not only on shipbuilding and aircraft building, but we also cut back on the size of our bases and our infrastructure. We are still attempting to recover from the decisions made in the 1990s with regard to our industrial base. It took us a long time to get into trouble. It's going to take us a while to get out of trouble.
What is the Navy's mission? That Jerry and Jim Talon address it in their National Review piece. The first is to provide the ballistic missiles umbrella for ourselves and our allies. How's that going, Jerry? Have we got enough boomers out there?
So technically we do. And right now, plan is in place to replace all 14 of the Ohio-class ballistic missile submarines, these large nuclear deterrent submarines, which carry nuclear-tipped missiles to give us an assured second response, a survivable second response in the event of a nuclear war. We are building the Columbia-class, and right now the Columbia-class is supposed to replace those Ohio boats one for one as they retire. However, I'm hearing word that there might be some delays in the Columbia-class that might actually see us dip down below the requirement of the number of submarines that we need in order to do that one for one swap. So we're watching that very closely. That nuclear deterrent may actually be somewhat in question at some point in time over the next decade.
The second mission is show the flag. What's that mean, Captain?
Well, we talk about naval presence, the idea of keeping your naval surface force largely out there and around, demonstrating that we have an interest or national interest on a global scale. We spent 70 years creating a global system of governance as well as a globalized economy. The U.S. Navy is the one who serves as the cop on the beat, making sure that all the rules and norms are obeyed on a daily basis. And John, that's breaking down right in front of our eyes. Anyone who looks at what is happening in the Red Sea, or for that matter, in the Mediterranean, which is sort of the central processor of the globalized economy. And if you recognize that the Dardanelles have been largely shut down due to the war in Ukraine, and grain shipments have been compromised there, as well as shipments of other raw materials, then you consider that the Suez Canal has largely been shut down due to terrorist activities in the Red Sea, then you realize that already we are beginning to see a cascade level failure in the Mediterranean. There's also some problems at the Panama Canal. So the naval presence, show the flag, deterrent, conventional deterrent force is beginning to erode, and our enemies no longer fear us or are deterred by us as much as they once were.
The major crisis repeatedly is the South China Sea. The Chinese Navy, the Chinese Coast Guard, the Chinese commercial fleet, they're all the same. They're intimidating the Philippines. Now and again, we show up and exercise with the Australians, exercise with the Japanese, I believe, and the Filipinos. But the Chinese don't seem to be impressed. They're not backing off. There was an incident very recently where they threatened a Philippine warship, I believe. So do we have enough for the major conflict zone, which is South China Sea?
No, John, we don't. First of all, no one expects that in the event of a conflict, that is, let's say China decides to invade Taiwan, which is more than a remote possibility, then really the U.S. Navy surface force will have to pull back. China has made major investments in anti-ship ballistic missiles, as well as cruise missiles, as well as long-range fighters and bombers to be able to push back the surface force, the exposed force, beyond the range of our weapons. We are highly dependent upon our fast attack submarine force in that case. We have around 50 fast attack submarines, but right now some 40% of those submarines are sidelined, having lost their dive certifications due to backlogs and maintenance. And so the remaining submarines there would have to be surged in. And given the small population of those boats, really only about 32 or so that are available, and only half of those are in the Pacific, then suddenly you start counting the number of torpedoes and missiles on each one of those boats, and you start running out of missiles before the Chinese run out of ships. So it becomes a really difficult math from the United States standpoint.
The final mission is warfighting. Is the Navy ready if China moves?
So again, because capacity is a capability in and of itself, and you look at our smaller numbers, China is fielding 370 ships, a point that was made within the Wall Street Journal article. We are hovering around 290 ships right now. Half of our ships are in the Atlantic, half are in the Pacific. So you recognize that China has a home field advantage since most of their fleet deploys inside their first island chain. They outnumber us in terms of number of ships. They outgun us in terms of the number of missiles on each one of those ships. And although our ships are better on a pound per pound basis, the simple fact is, you know, at some point in time, sheer numbers can overwhelm even high-tech capabilities.
Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy retired aviator at the Sagamore Institute, with his colleague Jim Talent. They published in the National Review Online at the beginning of the year, and now the Wall Street Journal picks up the same call for what is to be done when we come back. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.